then the Navi refers to fast days. The pasuk that is so often quoted is the pasuk at the top of the page from Sefer Zechariah. And that is the pasuk at the bottom of the schedule. It's just very hard to read. Vayihi devar Hashem tzvakot elai lemor. Ko amar Hashem tzvakot. Tzom harivi'i. Vitzom hachamishi. Vitzom hashri'i. Vitzom haasiri. Yihyeh levet Yehuda lesason. Ula simcha. Ula moadim tovim. Veha emet. Veha shalom. Ehavu. The Navi refers to four fast days. And in order to know which fast days we're talking about, we have to remember HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim. Nisan is the first of the month when it comes to Tanakh. First of the year, first month of the year when it comes to Tanakh. And so we have Tzom HaRevi'i, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz. That's the fast of Shiva Seba Tammuz. Tzom HaChamishi, the fifth month. Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, that's the fast of? Tisha B'Av, Yafeh. Tzom HaShvi'i, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, Elul, Tishrei, what fast is that? Tzom Gedalia, Yafeh Ma'od, not Yom Kippur. These are fast days of Churban. These are not fast days of Tshuva. Yom Kippur is one of the happiest days of the year. Tzom HaAsiri there is Tzom Gedalia. And of course, today, Tzom HaAsiri, not because today the 10th of the month, but the 10th month from Nisan, that is Asar B'Tevet. And this is the Nevuah that we say that these days, and we hope still today, will turn into days of happiness. It's a days where both truth and shalom will come together, will be in love, so to speak. And Mirtz Hashem, they'll turn into Sason and Simcha and Moadim Tovim. Rav Waxman a moment ago quoted an Avudraham. Avudraham, we all pronounce it Avudraham. Even later Rishonim pronounced his name Avudraham. He was a 14th century Rishon. And many people scholars more pronounce his name Avudraham. But we all call him Avudraham. He was a very, very important early Rishon. Lived right after the Rambam, and he says, and I have his a quote that Rav Waxman referred to, but I want to see it inside. He mentions the halachot of those four fast days, including Asar B'Tevet, and then he says, V'chiluk yesh b'neihem. They are not all identical, these four fast days. She'arba'at tatzomot heim nidachin lif'amim kishechalu b'shabbat. All those four fast days are pushed off if they ever were to fall out on Shabbos. Recently we had Tisha B'Av on Shabbos, didn't we? Shiva Seba Tammuz in Tisha B'Av, was it last year, 2 years ago? I think recently, when I used to do interviews for a certain high school in the United States, and I interviewed 8th graders to get into 9th grade, and I used to begin my interview trying to break the ice a little bit, so nervous in 8th grade. And I used to ask, the first question I asked is, what is the Hebrew date of Tisha B'Av? And until one girl didn't know the answer. And it got her more nervous, and I stopped asking that question. But it happens to be, if I say, when do we fast on Tisha B'Av, the answer is not always on Tisha B'Av. We don't always fast on Tisha B'Av. We sometimes fast on the 10th of Av if the 9th comes out on Shabbos. So all the fast days are pushed off if they happen to fall out on Shabbos. Chutz me'asara b'tevet. She'ein ochal le'olam b'Shabbat. It never falls out on Shabbos. Aval huchal lif'amim b'yom shishi u'mit'anim bo b'yom. Sometimes, it was last year, correct? Yeah. Asar B'Tevet fell out on Friday, and we fasted on Friday. You broke your fast on Kiddush. V'afilu, says the Avudraham, v'afilu, I'm on the fourth line. V'afilu hayachal b'Shabbat. Even if theoretically it did fall out on Shabbos, lo hayu yecholim lidchoto leyom acher, you would not be able to push it off to another day. Mipnesha ne'emar bo, the pasuk in Yechezkel, which you can look at down below, because the pasuk there says, as Rav Waxman hinted, be'etzem hayom hazeh kamo biyom kippurim, ve'ein v'shar hatzomot einan chalin leolam biyom shishi. Aser B'Tevet is the only fast that can fall out on a Friday, and we fast on a Friday, and says the Avudraham and the Beit Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo's Perush on the tour, disagrees, but the Avudraham has to be understood. He says that if it were, theoretically, Aser B'Tevet to fall out on Shabbos, we would fast on Shabbos like Yom Kippur. Aser B'Tevet that you and I are experiencing today, and still today, Amir Tzashem, it's not even Chatzot yet. And in Mirza Hashem, where it's going to turn into a happy day, but if it were to have fallen out on Shabbos and it were a sad day, according to Avudraham, a Rishon, we would fast, and we have to understand why. What makes this fast more powerful than the other three? What makes it more powerful? And I'd like to share with you an idea which is connected as Rav Waxman connected the three reasons that we fast. The eighth day of Tevet is a day that we commemorate, and I'm going to go into more detail a little bit later. The eighth day is the eighth day of Tevet is the commemoration of the Greek translation. As you heard, it's it was a day of Choshech, translation that was used as the foundation of anti-Semitism. They call it the Septuagint, the Targum Shivim. You know the story, right? The 70 Chachamim placed into 70 different rooms. They had to pervert the Torah. They had to. They couldn't write Bereshit Bara Elohim because that could be misunderstood. They had to write, if I'm not mistaken, Elohim Bara Bereshit, I think is the way they started. No? I think so. And other changes so that people wouldn't make a mistake. But it also led the way to anti-Semitism and perversion of the Torah. That's the 8th of Tevet, and we fast on today for that. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. The 9th of Av, as you heard, the 9th of Tevet, as you heard, is the Yortzeit of Ezra HaSofer. Ezra, who tried to bring back the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Jews in Bavel, after 70 years of Galut, only 70 years, Halavai, only 70 years of Galut, to come back and rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, Ezra was somewhat successful and somewhat not successful. He's compared to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara says that had there never been a Moshe, Chas V'Shalom, who would have received the Torah? Ezra would have received the Torah. And we commemorate his loss, his death, and other things that happened in his life, which I'm going to come back to in a few minutes. And of course, the 10th of Tevet commemorates the beginning of the end. Nebuchadnezzar, as described in Sefer Malachim, in the end of Sefer Malachim Bet, and Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel describe the beginning of the end, the siege around, and other Nevim, the siege around Yerushalayim, which ultimately led, 3 years later, to the destruction of Yerushalayim, the Galut of Yehuda, etc. I'd like to take a look at them in a little more depth in a few moments, but in order to understand the connection between those three, and in order to understand why Asara B'Tevet cannot be pushed off, even if theoretically it fell out on Shabbos, can you imagine fasting on Shabbos for Asara B'Tevet? You'd have a Friday night dinner. You'd have Friday night. You just would wake up and not eat until Havdalah. We have to understand two Gemaras, maybe a third. The first Gemara is a Gemara Masechet Brachot, Daf Lam Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara says as follows. Tanu Rabbanan, line 1. Tanu Rabbanan. Ma'aseh b'makom echad. There's a story, an incident of a certain city. Shehaya arod. There was some kind of snake, poisonous, venomous snake. V'haya, line 2 in the middle, V'haya mazik et habriot. It was injuring people, killing people. It would bite people, babies, chas v'shalom, elderly, chas v'shalom. Other people would be bitten and be killed by the venom. Ba'u v'hodiyu lo Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. They came and they had to call Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. There was this arod, this snake that's killing people. What do we do about it? We should say Tehillim. We should daven. Amar Lahem, line 3, Heru Li Et Choro, show me the hole. It's coming out of the ground. Show me the hole. Heru et charo, middle of line 3, they showed him the hole that the snake kept coming out of. And Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa does the unexpected. Natan akevo al pi hachor. He put his heel on top of the hole. Everyone's running away from the hole. He puts his foot on top of the hole. Yatza, the snake comes out. Unshacho, and it bit him. This is the end of Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. Line 4, Umeit oto arod. You have to read the whole sentence. Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa didn't die, the snake died. Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa puts his foot on the hole, the snake comes out, bites him, and the snake dies. Continues the story. Natlo, line 4. Natlo al ktefo. Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa places the snake on his shoulder. Veheviu lebeit hamidrash. He brought the snake to the Beit Midrash. Amar lahem, and he yells out in the Beit Midrash, Ra'u banai. Look! Ein arod may meet, line 5. Ein arod may meet. Snakes do not kill. Ella hachet may meet. Sin causes death. And there are shlichim in the world to bring death, absolutely. There are certainly shlichim in the world that bring death. However, the cause of death and injury, chas v'shalom lo aleinu, comes from sin. Be'ota sha'al, middle of line 5, At that time, Amru, this is what they said. Oy lo le'adam shepagabo arod. Woe is to the person who meets up with a snake. Line 6. Ve'oy lo la'arod shepagabo Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. And woe is to the snake who meets up with Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. Woe is to the snake who meets up with Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. Snakes don't kill, tsunamis don't kill, bullets don't kill, sin kills. Now I have to take a 60-second timeout and say the following. We are opposed, 100% adamantly opposed, to people who are self-proclaimed Nevi'im. In today's day and age, who know, they seem to know what nobody else knows. The tsunami happens because of XYZ. And Hurricane Sandy happens. I know why it happened, because of XYZ. I'll tell you why. And we're going to hear in a few minutes from the brother of one of the Korbanot in Harnof from 5 weeks ago. And there were people who had the absolute audacity. I'll tell you why this happened and that happened. We are opposed to that. Emir Tzashem, Nevim will return, Nevuah will return, and we'll be able to have more clarity. We'll be able to understand and connect the dots. But today, we don't have that luxury. And so we are not ascribing any specific sin and any specific event. Chas v'shalom. Number 2, we do everything we can, b'derech hateva and all the hishtadlut. I am not telling you to, chalila v'chas, put your heel on top of a snake. I'm telling you, be careful and we do all the hishtadluts and everything we can to make sure that we're taken care of. You'll take a look at the tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Somebody asked him whether it was a lack of emuna to get insurance, life insurance. And actually, you'll look it up, and it's called insurance. Aleph Yud Nun insurance. Today we have a Hebrew word for it, bituach. But is it? And he said the opposite. It's bitachon and hishtadlut to do. To get insurance, life insurance, and car insurance, etc. So we do everything we can to prevent this. Having said that, we also know that nothing happens for nothing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a plan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, and there's no mikre, there's nothing that happens by chance. Everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when something happens, chalila, to me, I have to introspect and have to figure out what it is, and I can't say specifically, I certainly can't tell you. You'll notice that everybody, these self-proclaimed Nevi'im, will always tell you what's wrong with you. Or that other place, oh, that tragedy happened, the airplane, because, but it's never about me. It's always about somebody else. So we don't ascribe one-to-one ratio, but we do realize that everything comes from Hashem, and if there is something that I know I'm lacking, I need to fix it. That is the Gemara in Brachot, and that is linked to the Gemara in Gittin Daf Nun Chen Amud Aleph. The Gemara Daf Nun Chen Amud Aleph is part of the Gemara that you're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av. Last year, you may recall, we were mourning on Tisha B'Av, and you're going to have to tell your children what it was like to mourn on Tisha B'Av. They're not going to believe you that Tisha B'Av was a sad day. They're going to, you know, as they're getting dressed to go out to the parade, marching down Rehov Yafo, heading into the Beit HaMikdash, they're not going to understand that when you were younger, you used to sit on the floor and eat eggs and have ashes and not even be able to say hello to people. And you were also not allowed to learn Torah, except for certain Torah that was related to the Churban. You'll tell your kids, be sure to tell your children what it was like. They're not going to believe you. Maybe you should save one of the keynotes that you bought. Don't put them in Shemos. Save them as a memento of what things used to be. I understand that some of those keynotes, before they started printing the very nice keynote, you know, the English translations, they used to be, I remember, they were flimsy paperbacks, and I heard from somebody that they didn't want to spend too much money on those foreign because they're going to be put in Shemos soon, in Geniza soon. Anyway, but one of the Gemaras when you were younger that you were allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av is the Gemara Nun Zayin Nun Chet about the Churban. And the Gemara continues like this. Nun Chet Amud Aleph, line 1. Tanu Rabbanan. Ma'aseh B'Rebbe Yehoshua Ben Chananya. There is a story that is told about Rabbi Yehoshua Ben Chananya. Shalach Likrach Gadol Sheberomi, line 2. He went to this huge city in Rome. Amrulo, because they told him, Tinok Echad Yesh Beveta Asurim, there is a child there. Tinok in modern Hebrew means a baby, but in the Gemara and the Mishnah, Tinok usually means a child. There is a child, a boy, in jail, in Rome. Yefe Einaim, beautiful eyes, Vitov Roi, good looking, Ukvutso Tavis Durot Lo Taltalim, curly hair, very attractive young boy, and he was kidnapped for whatever sick reasons that they had for him. And Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chananya was committed to save this boy. Halach, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chananya went to Amad al Petach Beta Asurim. He stands outside of the jail. Amru, Amar, and he says the following. You guys may remember there's a beautiful song. I'm not going to sing it, but okay, you know Shema Yisrael. You know that song? Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous song. It's based on a true story. I'm not sure you're familiar with that. It's based on a true story. Maybe you heard the story about Rabbi Silver. Rabbi Silver was an American rabbi, chaplain in the American army, who freed, I think it was Dachau and other places, I don't remember what, don't quote me on the details, but he, as you know, many children were placed in monasteries and other Catholic facilities to save them. Parents, siblings were all killed, and some children were placed, and when it came time, the way I understand the story is that Rabbi Silver used to go to these places and say, do you have any Jewish kids here? And sometimes they would say, oh, we don't have any Jews. No, you're thinking of another place. We don't have any Jewish kids. And he would scream out, Shema Yisrael. And the kids who had remembered when they were younger, their mother davening with them, Shema Yisrael, their eyes would light up and they would finish the pasuk or they would say it along with him. And he would say, that's a Jew and that's a Jew and that's a Jew. It's a very powerful, powerful story, giving up a child and finding that child. And it's really, it's unfathomable. Well, that, I have to believe that Rabbi Silver got the idea from this Gemara. From this Gemara. So he stood by line 3 at the end. He stands outside the prison and he says, a pasuk in Yeshayahu, Membet, Mi Natan Limshisa Yaakov. Who enabled that Yaakov, Bnei Yaakov, Bnei Yisrael, should become a mishisa, like captured loot. Who said that? Who made it happen that Yaakov would be taken captive, and here's a boy you're taking captive. V'Yisrael bozazim, and B'nai Yisrael, again, it's very poetic, you know, the same idea with different words. And who said, who enabled B'nai Yisrael to become loot, you know, booty from war? We're in the middle of a pasuk. He just started the pasuk. Ana oto tinok, this child yells back. V'yamar, Hallo Hashem zu chatanu lo. We sinned against Hashem, that's why we were taken captive. V'lo avu bidrachav, and we didn't follow, they didn't follow in his ways. Haloch v'lo shamu b'torato. End of beginning of line 5. They went, they didn't follow the Torah. And the boy finishes the pasuk and says of Yeshua ben Hananya, Amar, says line 5. Amar, muvtachani bo. I am confident about this boy. Shemore hora'a b'Yisrael. This boy is going to become a Gadol Hador. Ha'avodah, it's an expression of an oath. I swear. She'eini zaz mikan, I am not going anywhere. I am not going anywhere. Ad she'efdenu b'chol mamon she'poskin alav, I am going to free him. I swear I'm going to free him. Regardless of the money. Regardless of how much money, this is a halachic consideration, as you may recall. You may know the story of the Maharam Mirattenberg, one of the Baalei Tosfot, who was taken captive, and they asked for an exorbitant amount of money, and the Jewish community raised that amount of money, and the Maharam Mirattenberg, who we just heard about, he's buried in Germany, Nachon, and they raised that exorbitant amount of money, and he refused. He declined to be freed. He said, if you free me, then this is going to be a cycle of more hostages and more ransoms and more and exceedingly and increasingly higher ransoms. I refuse. And the Maharam Mirattenberg, one of the Baalei Tosfot, dies in jail. So it's not so simple what Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya is doing, but he does it. And he says, and I swear that he's going to be a great Gadol Hador. And what happens? V'lo, middle of line 6, V'lo hayu yamim muatim. And it wasn't a few days that he was saved and he was taken out. Ad shehora hora'a b'Yisrael, end of line 6, until he became himamish. This boy was freed and he became, literally just a little while later, a gadol hador. Umanu, line 7, who was this? Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha. Yishmael ben Elisha was the one that was saved by Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya. Now, this story could be identical to a Rabbi Silver story. There's a boy in jail, I don't know which one he is, and I gotta find him. Of course, you can ask, why would Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya pick that pasuk? Why didn't he say Shema Yisrael? Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and wait a little bit. V'ahavta l'reacha? Hamochan, he's the Jew. Why did he pick this pasuk? And secondly, how did he know immediately that this is going to be a Mora Harabi Yisrael, a Gadol Hador? And perhaps one can suggest he could have picked any pasuk, and he could have said that that's, you know, that he's the Jewish boy. But this boy and this pasuk and this boy expressed, it's related to the last Gemara we just said. What made this boy great? At a young age, he knew exactly what the pasuk meant. Who is the one who caused us to be taken away? Who is the one that caused us to be taken captive? It's not the geopolitical pressures. It's not economic pressures. It's not because the boy wasn't careful when he was walking home one day. It's not because B'nai Israel were not careful with this or that. The answer is because, no other reason other than Hallo Hashem zu chatanu lo v'lo avu bidrachav haloch v'lo shamu b'torato. Cause and effect. It is not the snake that kills, it is sin that kills. And it is the recognition that it is up to me to improve myself. It is up to me to improve my ways. And it's up to each one of us. And it's up to Klal Yisrael to improve. Can't blame anybody. Very good, and you're living this year specifically through an election year in Israel, and there's a lot of great going on in the world and in Israel also, and there's a lot of challenges, elections in every country. Number one, Baruch Hashem, we're so blessed to live in a democratic country. Well, you're allowed to say anything you want, and you can say something, I mean, not only halachically, I just mean politically. You don't get in jail for saying bad things about this one or that one. But it does bring out some bad machloket, unfortunately. And now is the time of year, if you want to figure out why the economy is having this problem, why the war happened this past summer, follow the news, and the answer is, it's somebody else's fault. It's somebody else's fault. In just this past week, there was a certain member of the Knesset who used to be a member of the elite cabinet of Bibi Netanyahu, who criticized everything that Netanyahu did in the war in the summer. And this is not a chadashot, and this is not politics. What's fascinating is that about 10 minutes later, Bibi Netanyahu's office just printed all of the votes that were made in the cabinet about the war. And it was that the candidate who said yes to every step, who approved every step, who pushed every step. So in other words, I said you should do X, I said you should do Y, I said you should do Z. Tomorrow morning, it's your fault. What do you mean your fault? You said that I should do it. You're the one that... Because if you want to be comfortable, blame somebody else. If you want to become a victim, blame somebody else. That's a great way to sleep at night. It's a great way to go through life with, you know, Teflon on your skin. It's always somebody else's fault. It's the boss's fault that I didn't get the raise. It's the student's fault that I didn't get the whatever. It's the teacher's fault that I didn't get the high grade. And these Gemaras are telling us no and no. It's possible. Who knows? But I got to look in the mirror. And that's the most healthy philosophical and psychological thing to do, is to look in the mirror. It reminds me of a Gemara that you all know from Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Zayin. The Gemara, I'll say it outside, now's not the time to do it inside, so because it's a little bit of a long Gemara, but you may remember the Gemara of Rabbi Elazar ben Durdaya. Rabbi Elazar ben Durdaya was the one who engaged in all pleasures, physical pleasures, Ba'olam Hazeh, and he heard about a certain woman on the other side of the world who he had never met, and so he spent a ton of money. You familiar with this Gemara? Yeah. Ton of money he spends to go to be with her, and turns out that she, of all people in the world, give him Musar, and she says, you're never getting into Olam Haba, and that sends him into a frenzy, and he does what everybody else would do. You blame other people, you blame other things, you latch onto somebody else. And so he davens to the mountain, he says to the mountains and the hills, daven for me, and they say, we can't. We're not here forever either. And then he says to the sun and the moon, first it's Shamayim Va'aretz, daven for me, and they also say, whatever this means allegorically, we can't daven for us, we can't daven for you, we're too busy, we also are not here forever. We're like you. If Hashem wants us to be destroyed, we're gone. And he davens to the sun and the moon. And finally he says the five most important words that he ever said in his whole life. Ein hadavar talui ela bi. That's a motto. Ein hadavar talui ela bi. It's on me. It's all about me. It's all about me. It's on me. This is about me. I can't go to the sun and the moon. I can't blame my this. I can't blame my teachers. I can't blame my parents. I can't blame my boss. I can't blame my spouse. Ein hadavar. I can't blame anybody. Ein hadavar talui ela bi. There is a really, really beautiful story, and I should not be the one to tell it to you because I don't tell it well enough, but Shlomo Karlbach tells a story. The title of the story, maybe in a minute and a half, it's a very powerful story. To make a long story short, the title of the story is called Schwarze Wolf, the Black Wolf. And it's the story is a man who comes to his Rebbe and he says that he wants to, he can't have children. And please daven for us to have children. How many of you are familiar with the story? Wow, okay. I should have played it for you instead of saying it. He's a better, and there's music, and it's a very powerful story. So you'll tell me if I don't tell it properly. But really quickly, So he goes to his Rebbe and he says, Rebbe, daven for us that we could have a child. And the Rebbe says, he davens and he says, I find out that you can't, I just found out that you can't have children. You will never have children. And the man davens and the Rebbe finally says, okay, if you get a bracha from Schwarze Wolf, from this man named Wolf, if you get a bracha from him, then you can have children. And the man says, what are you talking about? He's disgusting and he's vulgar and he's ugly. Him? And the Rebbe says, that's the message that I received. You've got to get a bracha from him. Okay. This Wolf was so far away, he was so out of touch with the community, he lived out of town. He lived outside in the outskirts of town, by himself, in the middle of the forest. How am I going to get a bracha from him? And the Rebbe says, you should go to him for Shabbos. If you go to him for Shabbos, you need a bracha before Shabbos gets out. Before Shabbos is out, if you get a bracha from him, great. If not, there's nothing else I can do. So, the man packs a little Shabbos package and he pretends to be wandering in the forest. This wolf is going to have to accept me. He can't kick me out. So really, right before Shkia, he knocks on the door. And the door opens up. And in that door is the most vulgar, disgusting, cursing man saying the most disgusting, what are you doing here? Spitting, what are you doing here? The man says, I lost my way. Is there a way I can stay here for Shabbos? And so Schwarze Wolf says, you sleep in the barn. And if you come into my house, I am killing you with my bare hands. That's a quote from Shlomo Karabach. I don't think it's proper English, but I seem to remember he said, I am killing you with my bare hands. And he sees, you know, behind Schwarze Wolf, he sees his wife, the most disgusting, vulgar person he's ever seen. And behind him were children. And usually children are very cute. And these children were ugly and disgusting. And okay, he sleeps in the barn, sleeps with the animals, sleeps in the hay, Friday night, Shabbos morning, Shabbos day, waiting for Schwarze Wolf to come in and give him a bracha, to invite him into his house. Nothing. Finally, nighttime begins falling, and the man realizes that three stars are about to come out, and he realizes that Shabbos is over, and if Shabbos is over, his life is over. He's not going to get the bracha, and says Shlomo Karabach, and for the first time in his life, the man finally prayed. And he gets down, he literally falls to the ground, and he davens from the bottom of his heart, and he davens, please Hashem. He doesn't ask his Rebbe, he doesn't ask Schwarze Wolf, he doesn't ask this, he doesn't ask that. Directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what can I do? How can I improve myself? How can my wife improve herself? What can we do? And literally, and again, the words are, for the first time in his life, he really, really prayed. Ein hadavar talui ela bi. It's on me, it's not on him, it's not on him, it's not on him. And when he's done davening, and he's covered in sweat, and covered in tears, and covered in hay from being on the ground, all of a sudden there's a crack of light coming from the barn door. The door opens, and who's standing there? Schwarze Wolf. And yesterday he looked so vulgar and so disgusting, and today he was the most handsome man you've ever seen. And he says, please join us for Shalashuddis, for the third meal. That's also a quote from the story. Please join us. And he gets up, and he dusts himself off, and he wipes his face, and he walks into the house. And yesterday, the wife who looked so disgusting and vulgar and cursing, today she was the most beautiful woman in the world. And the children yesterday who were so ugly and mean and nasty, today they were little high priests. That's also a quote. They were Kohanim Gedolim, little high priests. And the man is, what's going on? What's happening? And Schwarze Wolf says, I know what you came for. I know what you came for, and I promise you that within a year, you are going to have a child, and I ask you to name him Schwarze Wolf. And the man was so excited that he didn't even think, how can I name him after you? You are still alive. And he says, thank you, and they say Havdalah, and he runs back home, and he tells his wife, and they're very excited. And the next morning, he comes and he sees his Rebbe, and he says, Rebbe, I got the bracha, but let me ask you, why did Schwarze Wolf look so ugly and disgusting? And why, and then afterwards he looked so handsome, and his wife and his children, and says the Rebbe that he is one of the Lamed Vav Tzadikim. And Lamed Vav Tzadikim are merely mirrors. And if they are handsome, it's because you're handsome. And if they're ugly, Nebach, it means you're ugly. And as he's digesting this, the fact that everybody looked at this man as being disgusting, maybe it was because they themselves were disgusting, they were in shul, and all of a sudden there was a klop on the bima, and the gabbai says, we need 10 people to go to the cemetery to say Kaddish. Why? Who died? Nobody wants to go. Who died? Schwarze Wolf. Schwarze Wolf dies, and nobody wants to go. And the man gets up and says, the reason why nobody wants to go, he looked ugly because you're ugly. And I also thought he was ugly until I saw Ein Hadavar Talui Elabi. The story continues that Shlomo Karbach was telling the story once, and somebody afterwards came up to him and said that my alter Zadi, my great-grandfather's grandfather, was named Schwarze Wolf, and my name is also Schwarze Wolf. I'm named after that boy that was born a year later. It's a very powerful story. I can't tell it properly, but that's the message of Ein Hadavar Talui Elabi. On fast days, we focus on everything besides tshuva. We focus on how hungry we are. We focus on how tired we are. We focus on when is the fast over? And when is Chatzot Hayom? And these are all important questions. And I'm not saying to fast if you can't, but if the only thing you can say at the end of the day, at 5, whenever, when the fast is over and it's printed on the sheets, whenever the fast is over, if the only thing we can all say is that I didn't eat, well, we missed the whole point of the fast. The point is Ein Hadavar Talui Elabi, and I think that is a message that links the three reasons why we fast on Asara B'Tevet. Every one of these reasons, the translation, the life of Ezra, and the siege, every one of them did not appear so bad when they first happened. Take the Targum. A translation can be a tremendous thing. Look at the work that Art Scroll has done and Feldheim has done and all the other tremendous work that these translators have done. Look how much Torah is being learned now. Look how much Daf Yomi, the incredible $21 million went in to write the English Art Scroll Gemara. That's not to mention the Hebrew, not to mention the French, not to mention the Yerushalmi, not to mention all the other. It's huge. And it was fine. The problem is that they didn't realize at first what it was being used for in this case and for whom it was being used for. If I had a lemonade recipe that was, I shouldn't have said that, I'm a little hungry. If I had a lemonade recipe and it's phenomenal, so you ask me for it, of course I share it with you. So you can make more lemonade and you can have it and you can share it with your friends. But if the reason why you're getting the lemonade was so that you can learn how to poison it, well, then that's a terrible thing. And we have to realize it immediately. There's a certain sense of urgency. It's not good. Things are not fine. I have to look in the mirror and figure out why this happened and not just say, be complacent and not just procrastinate. Ezra HaSofer is begging B'nai Yisrael, come back to Yerushalayim. And of the millions of Jews in Bavel, how many millions returned? How many hundreds of thousands of Jews got on the Nefesh B'Nefesh flight and came back to Yerushalayim to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash? And a whopping number of 42,000 people. And not even the leaders. Not even the Kohanim and Levim. 42,000 people get on a plane and come back to Yerushalayim to rebuild the second Beit HaMikdash. It's fine. Everything's fine. There's no sense of urgency. There's no sense of emergency. Everything is fine. There's no reason to change my ways. There's no reason to shake up my life. There's no reason to look in the mirror. Everything's fine. And obviously the big picture proved them wrong. And lastly, the siege around Yerushalayim, you know better than me. You've been learning about the Shoah, many of you, more recently than I have. But the set of laws that were made in Eastern Europe, were they called Nuremberg laws? That slowly, right, made it worse and worse for the Jews, yeah? Lahavdil. Take a look at the Ramban in the beginning of next week's Parsha of Sefer Shemot. That's exactly what the Ramban says Paro did. slowly, slowly making it worse and making it worse and making it worse. It's not so bad. Okay, so we can't become lawyers and doctors. There's other jobs in Germany for you and me. Okay, we can't live everywhere. And I'm not passing judgment at all. Chalila v'chalila. It makes perfect sense. Things will be fine. Things will be fine. But Asara Batev, and by the way, the siege around Yerushalayim was very similar. I think I mentioned this past Sunday. Siege around Yerushalayim, take a look at the Sefer Malachim Bet Chaf Hei. It lasted 3 years. It didn't last 3 days or 3 hours. Okay, there's a siege around Yerushalayim. We're going to talk about it. They had enough food to last for 3 years. We'll talk about it. We'll negotiate. We'll figure it out. There's no sense of urgency. There's no sense of emergency. There's no sense of I need to look in the mirror. There's no sense of me needing to shake things up for myself or for my family or for my community. Things will be fine. Things have been fine. They will be fine. And Asara B'Tevet is the fast day that reminds us of urgency, reminds us that even when things are fine, there's always areas of improvement. Well, if the theme of Asara B'Tevet is that we must shake things up, if the theme is I have to mamish change my ways, those of you who've had the opportunity to learn Al HaTshuva and to learn the gorgeous way that Rabbi Soloveitchik distinguishes between the kapara level of tshuva and the tahara level of tshuva, nachon, that kapara is fine. We all said it this morning. We were half asleep. My minyan this morning started at 6 in the morning. Hashamnu, bagadnu, slichot. Everything's fine. That's kapara. But tahara is a much more fundamental, much more yesodi change. If Asara B'Tevet is the fast day, that reminds us that even when things seem fine, there's a sense of urgency. I've got to make some changes now. I've got to make the sense of emergency now. The alarm bells are going off now. Well, how can I push off a fast day? That tells me not to push off tshuva. We started by talking about the Abu Draham who said that if it came out on Shabbos, you fast on Shabbos. How can that be? The answer is, I think, because the theme of Asara B'Tevet is don't push it off. Don't wait till tomorrow. Oh, the fast is coming? Okay, we'll do it tomorrow. That's the exact opposite of what the whole fast means. The old joke about we're going to have a meeting, Procrastinators Anonymous. The meeting that was supposed to be held today is going to be held next week. That's exactly what that would be. Okay, there's a fast about how urgent things are, and we'll talk about it tomorrow. That can't be. We'll talk about it today. And so Asara B'Tevet commemorates that and makes us wake up a little bit and realize that things we need to change, and every single one of us in this room, myself included, and every human who's alive, has areas of improvement. And Emir Tzashem, if we recognize that we need to improve, Emir Tzashem, if we recognize that things need to be changed, and we realize that Ein Adavar Taloi Elabi, there's sometimes you'll see, you've heard this sometimes from people, Chas V'Shalom, Chas V'Shalom, Chas V'Shalom, if a family is undergoing certain hardships, sometimes the recommendation will be to check the mezuzahs. We all know that. Check the mezuzahs. And let me make something very clear. I'll state it publicly. I love the mitzvah of mezuzah. I try my best to keep the mitzvah of mezuzah. I try to have my mezuzahs checked as much as I'm supposed to halachically. Indoors, outdoors, I understand. But do you understand what we just said? Things are going wrong. And what do? Check that thing over there. Check it. It's over there. And there are stories. We know stories. My wife is an occupational therapist, and she's a certified hand therapist. Her specialty, she spends all day working just on this part of the body, right here. Hashem is so wise that just this part of the body is a whole profession. And she'll tell you stories of people who come in, my hand is broken, and I'm going to check my mezuzah because I bet the word yadcha is misspelled. And I would imagine with the millions of mezuzot in the world and the millions of broken hands in the world, I would imagine there have been stories of a mezuzah finding the word yadcha without the yud, without the dalet. Ah, you see? And fix the mezuzah, and my hand will get better. And I say that's a beautiful story, and Hashem works in a wise way. But those stories trick us. They trick us to say, if something's wrong, go figure out something else. Go figure out, external to me, go let me do something else. And if we internalize that, Emir Tzashem, the Nevuah of Zechariah, who says, Ko Amar Hashem Tzvakot, Tzoma Revi'i, V'Tzoma Chamishi, V'Tzoma Shvi'i, V'Tzoma Asiri, Emir Tzashem, Yihyeh, Levet Yehuda, Lesason, Ul Simcha, Ul Muadim Tovim. Have a meaningful and easy fast, everybody.